Welcome to All Sides with Ann Fisher. September is Hunger Action Month, and to mark that, to note that, we've invited three leaders in the Central Ohio community dedicated to ending hunger. Joining us is Scott Merrier. He's executive director of the Westerville Area Resource Ministry, also known as WARM. It's kind of like the retail outlet. Welcome, Scott.
Good morning. Thank you.
And also with us is Lisa Hamler-Fugit. She is executive director of the Ohio Association of Second Harvest Food Banks. It's a private nonprofit, not-for-profit organization. It's Ohio's largest charitable food assistance network. Welcome to the show, Lisa.
Good morning.
And also Matt Habash. He is president and CEO of the Mid-Ohio Food Bank. It's kind of like the regional distributor. We were all working this out beforehand. Hi, Matt.
Good morning.
Just to kick it off, make sure everybody's on the same page with our listeners and everyone, is how do we define hunger nowadays? It's a lot different than maybe it was 50 or 60 years ago. What is it? What do you call it?
The United States Department of Agriculture measures hunger. And in essence, it's the deprivation of resources necessary to provide a wholesome, nutritious food for yourself and your family, a lack of resources, whether it be money, food stamps, other programs. What we have seen since the government has been studying hunger and food security, that rates have been increasing at alarming rates. In fact, the last release of data, the United States Department of Agriculture found that Ohio ranked third in the nation of children who suffer from food insecurity, also known as hunger or very severe food insecurity. Nearly 25% of all children under the age of five, Ohio falls only behind Louisiana and North Carolina.
Why is that? Is there any sense about when you look at those kind of statistics, what does that mean? Where is Ohio falling short in feeding its children?
Well, it was an interesting statistic, I think. I just came from a briefing from Columbus 2020, and they were talking about in the last 10 years, 10 years ago, we were $1,500 average income higher than the national average. Now Columbus and Central Ohio is $1,000 lower than the national. We have a $2,500 shift in income. I mean, the part of this is that, it's where your resources are coming from to be able to provide for. And one of the issues I think they've is yet we've led kind of the country in a lot of ways in job creation. Most of those jobs were very low-paying jobs, and so as a result, you've got people living at the edge or living in poverty. And with the downturn in the economy, we've seen this huge increase in people coming to help. Clearly, you see that from the Westervilles and the suburbs asking for help for the first time ever.
Right. Suburbs is a growing concern. Worthington opened its third pantry. Westerville, you've been around for a long time, Scott.
We have been around for a while, and, you continually do the educational process that there is really poverty in the suburbs as well. We're the 10th largest school district in the state. And with the win-win combination, you have folks that are beyond the boundaries of Westerville proper, but the school district being 52 square miles large has last year's statistics had 27% of the kids attending Westerville schools were participating in a government-sponsored feeding program, free and reduced lunch, after-school snack, free breakfast, which means they live at 180% or below the federal poverty guideline. And being a USDA distributor with Matt's group, we serve up to 200% or below. So we see that number even larger right within our own school district. To put that into real numbers, that means there's about 8,000 families within the Westerville School District at risk of not knowing where lunch is going to come from today, where the four of us sitting here take for granted that lunch is coming and where dinner is and those types of things. Those are families that are not sure food insecurity. Our working definition is they're not sure where dinner is going to come from tonight, because when they go to the cupboard tonight, it's probably bare.
How much does stigma still play into it, particularly, I guess, in the suburbs? But does the people who have never gone and asked for food before are having to do that?
It's extremely embarrassing, I think, and it's very difficult to if you've never had to ask for help, you start hearing the stories of, grandparents who've worked, played by all the rules. Now the kids have moved back in with the grandkids, and all of a sudden their pension doesn't go far enough. They have to go out and for the first time say, I'm not going to let my grandkids go hungry. I got to ask for help in order to make that kind of story you just hear over and over again, in terms of people coming for the first time, people saying, I used to donate to the food drives and to the food pantries, and now I need help.
I think the biggest thing that the stigma we're trying to overcome is that it's those people. Mm-hmm. It's not. It's my cousin. It's my neighbor. Mm-hmm. It's the fellow that I go to church with are now people that live at that at what we're calling this at-risk level of poverty that are really seeking assistance. And we build local agencies around the issue of trying to build people's self-esteem and deal with the pride issue because contrary to popular belief, nobody comes to a food pantry because they want to. I mean, it's just not the preferred thing that you'd want to do. There is a stigma attached to that. So how do you do that to really create an environment where it's empowering and educational so that for those outside that loop who think that everybody's doing fine because we live within our own 12 square feet of influence, if I'm doing fine, that must mean everybody else is doing fine. The educational need for that to say, gee, our neighbors aren't doing so well. And what are practical ways that we can assist them? And hence the whole food pantry, the whole food network, the whole distribution network comes into play on how people really can make a difference if they have the opportunity.
If you're just joining us, this is All Sides with Ann Fisher, and my guests are Lisa Hamler-Fugit, the Ohio Association of Second Harvest Food Banks. She's the executive director there, and Matt Habash, president and CEO of the Mid-Ohio Food Bank, and also Scott Marrier. He is the executive director of WARM, the Westerville Area Resource Ministry. So you want to give us a call, 614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. Is this true across the nation?
Absolutely. And this didn't just happen overnight.
Right.
We have been studying through research at the federal level. All of our food banks participated in Hunger America. The growing demand on emergency food assistance is happening directly because of rising poverty, unemployment, and wage stagnation. This is not specific to Ohio. It is a nationwide problem. Today in America, 1 in 8 Americans struggle to be able to secure enough food for themselves and their families. It put simply, hunger is merely a symptom of poverty.
One thing, there's been a lot of changes in how you get the food to people who need it over the years. Just everything from the delivery system, it's much more dignified, it's much more respectful of people's dignity, and it's more efficient. But in the same token, a lot of your sources of food, the big suppliers, the big retailers of food are becoming more efficient as well about how they order their things and how they, you know, how is that affecting you long term that the big guys are getting better at controlling their food costs?
Well, I mean, most food companies didn't get in business to donate their food.
Exactly.
They got in business to sell it. So
exactly.
if they donate too much of it or waste too much of it, they're going out of business. Mm-hmm. So that's the last thing we want to see happen. They've been wonderful partners. The food industry has been the backbone of food banking from the day it started. It was really about capturing the surplus food that the food industry had. It was perfectly good, healthy food, but it's just unmarketable for whatever reason. And we've been capturing that. As the industry's gotten more efficient, we all have keychains with those little tags on. They know exactly what you bought. The stores can plan a lot better, et cetera, et cetera.
Exactly.
They've reduced the amount of surplus in the system. So we've had to continue to look for new ways to distribute food. So we bring in bulk food and repack it. You know, we've moved heavily, heavily into produce, you know, which is, you know, good, healthy food, you know, that's absolutely for us is something that's now 20% of the total amount of food that we distribute. Most people don't know that because we promote Operation Feed so heavily in getting involved in a food drive, and we ask for non-perishable food, and anytime you do a food drive, you know, so as a result, people don't realize that, you know, most of, you know, a growing chunk, in fact, the fastest growing segment of the food sourcing that we have available both locally and nationally is produce.
That's making it more complicated, though, isn't it? Because it's perishable.
Absolutely. From our end, it's, you know, we built big coolers so we can, you know, hold the product a little longer at our warehouse. We've got refrigerated trucks. We've had to ask, you know, we've got a capacity assessment study going on right now with Ohio State, with the Glenn School, to really, you know, look at all of our agencies and saying what is their capacity on a variety of fronts. And one of those is space and the ability and the willingness to handle produce. Because when you, in the old model, you were a church pantry, you know, you had a closet, you had a room, you know, kind of thing, and you put staples in it, you know, and that's what you gave out. Now all of a sudden, here comes this good, healthy, you know, produce, but very, very perishable. Got to create all new distribution models. And you got to also realistically teach people how to use it.
And the Mid-Ohio Food Bank has the economies of scale, but what do you do in Westerville, Scott?
Well, it certainly challenges us at a local level to collaborate more effectively because let's use the fresh produce in the summer, in the summertime as it's available. in a small operation, you might not be able to use all that wants to be donated to you locally. So we got in the redistribution business within our own local market. So when a farmer's market drops stuff off and we know that we can only use so much in the next 2 or 3 days, we get on the phone and talk to our neighbors in Worthington and Dublin and Westerville and surrounding areas, New Albany and surrounding areas, saying, hey, you know, we hit the mother load on this. If you want some, come and get it. Or last year, we got a truck to help with our own operation. We're sharing that truck with others, sending them food and distributing so that it doesn't get wasted. So locally, the challenge that puts on you is to we have to be part of the marketplace as well. So you have to get more efficient. You have to look outside the box and how you traditionally did it. It's not just about us four and no more. It's a matter of how do we share that? With the thought that someday I know that some of those pantries might give me a call and say, hey, I have a plethora of this. Can you help me download some of that? So it's working through the efficiencies on scale. Matt does it regionally. Lisa does it, you know, statewide. I do it within the local community too. And it's those kinds of partnerships that I think creates a lot of impact at a community level to say they're really credible. They really care about how things are happening there, which, again, creates a new level of partnership with farmers markets and others because you're handling it effectively. They want to see it go to good use. And when you can fulfill that, it strengthens that partnership locally and regionally, which, again, then cultivates even as demand goes up, provides more. So learning to do more with less is, you know, a lesson that we're all trying to learn. But I think a big part of that is collaboration and sharing, the idea that together we can do it much more effectively than we can do it individually.
And then what you end up doing with that as well is starting to look for ways to do distributions differently rather than saying – here's a truckload of, you know, of corn. You know, how much of it can you take, and getting them to take it, and then they're stuck with it when they don't have the refrigeration or whatever, is to set up alternative distributions. We'll go set up the distribution now in partnership with the agency. They do all the casework. They know all the clients. Mm-hmm. We set up the farmer's market, if you will, and when we're done, we pack up what's left and take it back in a refrigerated truck and go to the next site. Or we're now we have a mobile pantry that now goes to daycares at 5 o'clock, you know, for the inner-city daycares. It goes to senior citizen centers. It goes to the physician's free clinic on Monday nights, you know, and sets up so that we can distribute food where people are at and hopefully reduce some of this growing demand on the pantries as well.
Because where they're at is a big problem. They often don't have transportation.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Exactly.
We have to take a quick break. When we get back, we'll be joining our guests again, Lisa Hamler-Fugit of the Ohio Association of Second Harvest Food Banks, Matt Habash of the Mid-Ohio Food Bank, and Scott Marrier of the Westerville, I want to just say warm,
just
Scott,
warm.
But it's
Westerville
Area Resource Ministry. We'll be right back. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on WOSU 820 NPR News.
This is WOSU 820 NPR News. And tonight at 8 on WOSU TV, Speaking in Tongues considers America remaining an English-only nation and reflects much bigger concerns that language is a metaphor for the barriers that come between neighbors. In the program, it follows several children when they start learning two languages on the first day of kindergarten, developing both bicultural and bilingual fluency. See how this educational adventure unfolds tonight at 8 in Speaking in Tongues on WOSU TV. And it's 67 degrees in downtown Columbus at 11:20 this morning. Sunshine today and a nice day with a high of 75. Clear skies tonight, a little chilly, a low of 48 degrees. Sunny tomorrow and a high of 75. All Sides with Ann Fisher continues. This is WOSU 820 NPR News.
Welcome back to All Sides with Ann Fisher. September is Hunger Action Month, and a little bit of the action we're taking here is to talk about the issue of hunger and talk about the food bank process in Ohio and around the nation. Lisa, we were just talking about distribution issues and how it's becoming much more sophisticated now. Gardening is a big part of that. Mid-Ohio Food Bank has started their garden now out of their new spread out there, and churches do it, all kinds of – there's lots of community gardens. Is that typical now around the country, around the state?
It is. And it, as Matt said, it's really growing. There is a program called Plant a Row for the Hungry that has been around for almost two decades now. So as the local food movements have really caught on, we're seeing more individuals connected to where their food is. I also want to talk about a scale. We each quarter are feeding over 1.7 million Ohioans. So the need to provide food in substantial quantities to be able to meet the growing demand is where our agriculture clearance program comes in. It is more than a decade-long process and partnership with the Ohio General Assembly that links not only public dollars to emergency food providers, but also to over 100 farmers, growers, and commodity producers that last year provided 26 million pounds of wholesome fresh fruits, vegetables, and protein items that had no retail value. What we call them is cosmetically challenged fruits and vegetables, not grade A, but perfectly wholesome.
Like the stuff in my garden is what you're saying. Right. Okay. So, all right. Well, let's get to that. Let's get to the Food Purchase and Agricultural Clearance Program, the state's Food Assistance Outreach Plan. Those are both funded partially from state government, and state government is facing upwards of maybe not quite up to $8 billion now because they're bringing in more than they thought they would in revenue, but bad enough. What are your expectations about how these programs will survive?
They have been described as the most successful public-private partnerships currently operating in the state of Ohio. We have had wide bipartisan support. Hunger is not a partisan issue. While we recognize the challenges that are before us, food is the most basic of all human need. And without ensuring that our Ohio citizens are given access and well-fed, that the overall cost of government certainly lost educational attainment, lost productivity, and increasing cost for health care are going to rise. We are advocating a balanced approach. In the next budget, we will not cut our way out of an $8 billion structural deficit. It will need to be a combination of probably some consolidation, some cuts, but certainly additional revenue. Hunger that we know now is a growing problem. Massive wage stagnation, higher unemployment. We're better than this, and we will mobilize our 12 food banks, 3,000 member agencies, and tens of thousands of those who work on the front line to make sure that our issue is front and center when we move into the 2012-2013 state budget.
There's that committee that's been established to study the budget. I don't know how often they've gotten together yet, but are you going to those folks and talking to them now?
Absolutely, and throughout the budget process, in fact, we have offered recommendation after recommendation after recommendation. I'm proud of the sophistication of not only our food banks but our member agencies who have seen where there can be areas of consolidation. We have offered those up. We have also been very creative as far as additional revenue that may be identified, as well as some changes that were made in House Bill 66 that set about the largest tax cut ever in Ohio's history. And I like to remind people that since 2005, they have been the beneficiaries of the largest tax cut ever in Ohio's history, but yet only 8% of Ohioans realize that. This is the time to pull together. It's a time to make sure that all essential services are funded and that we work together to bring ourselves out of this great recession.
Matt, where is the demand highest? And where are we overwhelmed in terms of getting food to people who need it?
Well, the demand obviously is highest in the urban areas. Okay. I mean, clearly that's where the numbers of people are. But the challenge is getting food to people where they're at. You know, your comments about, you know, how people get if they don't have a bus. Well, you go to a rural community, there's not even a bus route to get on,
right.
Let alone. So our challenge, and there's less food pantries. There's 130 food pantries in Franklin County. A couple of my other counties have three or four. So our challenge is getting food to people. And part of what we're looking at with that capacity study that I mentioned really was around you know, how far do people travel? You know, how do we get food closer to them? Where do we need to get it so that people can access the food? And when you start looking at it from how you're going to turn this around, you know, there aren't any jobs out there either. So we know we're going to have to continue to get better and look for ways to get the food out to people. So the challenge really is in my rural 19 counties, much more so than the urban center, but clearly the numbers of people in Franklin County make up more than 50% of our volume.
All right. Scott, have you felt overwhelmed where the cupboards are bare, or are you managing to keep it going?
Well, I won't do self-confessed overwhelmed because that means that there's not hope there.
Oh, that's right. That's the wrong word.
Best practice to be able to do that. But the challenge is there. We're up 11% this year in demand on top of 35% last year. So in a two-year run, we're at about a 50% increase. That doesn't happen without making some other resources available and getting creative in how you do that, collaborating within the community and those types of things. The concentration, what's happening today is poverty has become very fluid. So the old model where you could put a community development center in an urban area doesn't work anymore because people are so fluid. And so where we're seeing the migration of poverty to the suburbs is creating much of that impact and growth because people are migrating to the suburbs. They're looking for better education. They're looking for better and more affordable housing. They're looking for the jobs. And because there's not a great transportation system in Central Ohio, public transportation system, they've got to migrate and be out closer to them. So in our neck of the woods, that's Polaris, that's Easton, and those particular areas. And so all those service jobs bring people out and create that demand as well. So Matt's exactly right. It's not also just being a come-to place. It's being mobilized. It's a missional issue. You got to go to where people are at to be able to help them and empower them to take a greater sense of control over their circumstances.
You know, Lisa, agencies in the rural areas of Ohio struggle with all sorts of issues, whether it's schools or hospitals and the food banks, as Matt mentioned, you know, sometimes in some of these counties, maybe one or two or three food banks. What do you do? How do you help them?
One of the things that we do is bring as many resources to bear as we possibly can. We have started a program called the Ohio Benefit Bank Program, mm-hmm. which is a public-private partnership. It's an internet-based application assistance program that many of the people that are standing in our food lines appear to be eligible for a broad array of other programs, such as the food stamp program, now known as SNAP, Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, child nutrition programs, the Home Energy Assistance Program, Medicaid or SCHIP for their children. In 90 seconds, we can determine how likely a family or an individual is for any of these programs. And then through a network of some 1,200 member charities, we have a trained counselor that works with those families to complete the applications and then electronically submit those to the public agency, which will determine eligibility in the case of the Job and Family Services. That has been a tremendous help in connecting people to the resources where they can make appropriate choices. We want people out of our food pantry lines and standing in grocery store checkout lines. It's also an economic driver.
Why did you decide, who decided that the Ohio Benefit Bank was needed? How did you figure out that people just weren't getting connected with the resources they deserved or needed?
Food banks have been partnering with the Ohio General Assembly for over 14 years. And every 2 years, we would go back to the General Assembly advocating for additional resources to fund emergency food assistance. And there was a question that both liberals and conservatives would ask, which is, what more are you doing to help connect people to the resources that are available? And we were very fortunate in Ohio. This program had been developed by the National Council of Churches. The Columbus Foundation took a leading role. We were able to bring in 8 state agencies and four federal agencies to operate this program. We've served over 164,000 Ohioans, returning nearly $350 million in work support programs and tax credits. You know, we had to do it. We were seeing declining resources and knew that each year $1.7 billion goes unclaimed in the way of federal benefits. It was the right thing to do. We took a leap of faith, and our wonderful partners, our agencies, and our volunteers said, this is the right thing to do now.
614-292-8513 if you want to join the conversation on All Sides with Ann Fisher. You can also email us at allsides@wosu.org. And we do have a question from a caller. They didn't want to have their voice on the air. Do people whose only source of income is Social Security disability, $900 to $1,000 a month, qualify for food assistance?
Absolutely.
Yeah, absolutely. The standard guideline that we operate under is anyone who is at 200% or below the federal poverty guideline established by the United States Health, Department of Health and Human Services is eligible for food assistance through our distribution network as part of the national, regional, and local food bank system.
How often do you find that people don't know what they qualify for?
Well, you know, much to, you know, what Lisa was talking
right.
about, that was the biggest problem. I mean, the networking has changed as well with the meltdown in the nuclear family and those types of things. When your life gets turned upside down, 79% of the population is three paychecks away from bankruptcy. So they're not sure where to turn. And so the benefit bank has been a tremendous response locally for people to just get some help in saying, oh, at least I know where to go and call. More importantly, it focuses their time and energy because we can pre-qualify them for what they would be eligible for. In the old system, you'd send them to referring places and they might go from shop to shop to shop trying to find what they're eligible for, only to find that they didn't qualify. And so you take frustrated individuals who are already down on their luck. And you exasperate that by sending them to five places where they can't get help, I mean, through bureaucracy and those types of things. This has cut all that away. This has focused people on saying, this is what you're eligible for. Here's the agency that you can go to. And here's an appointment. And here's a person you can talk with. So it's just cut out a lot of the red tape that traditionally was there as obstacles that most people couldn't navigate. They wouldn't. It was just too cumbersome. And then this has really helped do that. So it's been a great proactive step in just helping people get assistance. I think we shrunk the time from applying and getting food stamps from like 5 months to like 5 days. I mean, it's just been almost miraculous in conjunction with that.
You know, Lisa, I was reading your biography. You serve on lots of state and federal organizations. And I'm sure you all serve on all kinds of things to work toward the elimination of hunger and poverty. And I was wondering, you've been doing this for a while. Are things any better, or are you just getting better at what you do?
I think it's a combination. It certainly has gotten worse since the Great Recession. I think at this point what we're hoping is that more folks will come together and that we can have a very serious dialogue in our communities, within our state and our nation about what our priorities are, that we need to make strategic investments not only in infrastructure but in quality education, job training. We are very concerned at the association of the long-term unemployment that is plaguing Ohio. Many of these individuals are known as the 99-weekers. In our history, it was called the Great Depression. And one of the things that helped us turn around in that was a massive public works program. We are having a lot of discussions now, certainly at the state and federal level. We have got to put people back to work. We have to put people back to work so they not only can support themselves and their families, but it's about rebuilding infrastructure as well.
And Matt, what about you? You've been doing this a few years.
Yeah. Unfortunately, I'm celebrating my 26th year, and I said when I started I wanted to go out of business.
Exactly.
And I failed miserably at that task.
Well,
but at the same time, we've been able to do, I think, a lot of good. I there's an encouragement, as I said, I came from a meeting on Columbus 2020 today, and somebody's in Old Politico and really concerned about economic development. The focus that I think is happening now at that level to say we've got to create not only jobs, but we've got to create jobs that pay a living wage, and we've got to bring that. We have the assets here. Too often Columbus doesn't like to shine a light on itself and recognize. So I think from that side of things, I'm real encouraged. Yet it's the worst I've seen it in 26 years. We've got people asking for help that never, ever would have thought they would ask for help. And we're really trying to get them in early. I think if there's a strategy, it is while you still have some resources, come get the additional help you need, so that you can stabilize yourself. Because if you continue to go down a path of exhausting all of your resources, you hit a place where you can't get back out. And so the challenge is, how do you do that? I also think this is a time where you don't have to go out and explain there's a hunger problem. Everybody knows somebody. It's hit the burbs, and the increase in our
numbers, frankly, are coming from the burbs. You know, and our overall increase is much lower than 11%. So it's really coming from communities where we never really saw that before. So if people can rally around, and I think things like Hunger Action Month give us an opportunity, and we've got on our website 30 ways in 30 days that you can help. It's get people engaged.
It's not Hunger Awareness Month.
It's Hunger Action Month. It really is. Get involved. Make a difference. Help somebody. So whether you're doing a community garden at a very low, you know, local level, you know, that's a way to get involved. You know, having a drive, connecting with your neighbors, helping those folks out. You know, Scott and I were talking earlier about a wonderful chef program they have with a chef who's come in, you know, that wants to get connected. There's all kinds of ways to get involved. And I think that's the key thing that's going to – because if we don't do that collectively as a community and as a country, we're going to be in far worse shape.
Jeff, how long have you been doing this?
Scott.
I mean Scott, sorry.
Well, I've been on this side of it for 6 years now. Again, with the thought with Matt of saying, you know, when we work ourselves out of business, we'll know that we're successful. I look at the alternative, what would happen if we're not there? Mm-hmm. So it's not a perfect solution, but it's the best one now. And as a local practitioner, we, you know, you do everything that you can with the resources that are made available. So it's exciting to see the growth of the efficiencies in our networking and our collaboration and those types of things. I mean, I shudder to think without those efficiencies that we've gained, without your new building and the distribution center and those types of things, where we would be. You know, we'd be so far behind the curve. Matt mentioned something else that I think is really important, and that's for our listeners, and that is everybody can do something. And when we mobilize like that, when we localize it, it's not going to – the government's not going to solve it. The church isn't going to solve it. Food banks aren't going to solve it. Collectively, though, as we boil down poverty at a local level, at the Westerville level, at the city of Columbus level and those types of things, we can have a tremendous impact because we can mobilize people to take responsibilities, whether it's the 30 things in 30 days or whether it's just I'm going to help my neighbor, whatever the simple philosophy is, everybody, every listener can do something to impact that locally, regionally, statewide, or nationally.
Okay, and I was thinking, why did I call you Jeff? It's because we have an email from Jeff.
Oh, great.
It wasn't completely out of the ether. Jeff writes, I regularly get produce from a coworker. They're getting it from their church's food bank. This is not because they're impoverished, but rather because it's produce that the local food bank is unable to distribute because their clients won't take it. I am told they want easy to prepare things because, for example, they're working mothers without a lot of time to figure out what to do with acorn squash or parsnips, let alone trying to get their kids to eat it. I know that. I really think a lot of produce is going to waste. So what do you do about that? Because there is that issue, plus just not knowing how to cook.
Most of our produce is in pretty simple goods. I talk a lot about the acorn squash. So I laughed when I heard that because, I mean, when you get something like acorn squash, most people aren't buying acorn squash. You know, we got a semi-load. I went into my local grocery store and counted 20. So, and I've got an entire truckload of those. But it's a very simple thing to cook. You know, it's something you can cook.
I made it last night.
You can cook in a microwave. You put butter and even a little brown sugar on it. You might get a kid to eat it, you know, kind of thing. But it's a very healthy, nutritious thing to do. So that is part of our challenge. Most of it is in what people know what to do. But the reality of it is most of us are not cooking. You know, so how you introduce produce back into a system, but, you know, that we've got to all learn how to cook more and prepare healthier foods. One of the challenges we have is really wanting to prepare to give out healthier and healthier foods. You know, and so one of the challenges we have is making sure people know what to do with it. The last thing we ever want to have happen is somebody waste food. So sharing it with each other, sharing it between gardens, when they share the foods they have in excess. If you grow too much zucchini, give it to your neighbors. Let them, you know, give them the recipe that goes with it so they know how to make zucchini squash or zucchini bread or something else. It's really about that. It's just that simple. This is getting back to our roots and recognizing that we as a community, we only produce 1% of our food locally. It used to be 50% during the Victory Garden days. We've got to get back to this. This is about communities being able to feed themselves.
Okay, we have to take another break. When we return, we'll talk about some of those 30 actions for 30 days that they're doing during September, which is Hunger Action Month. Question or comment, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. We'll be right back. This is All Sides with Ann Fisher on WOSU 820 NPR News.
On Fresh Air, you'll hear conversations that you won't hear anywhere else.
Do you understand love?
Well, I understand caring. See, most of my relationships are more intellect, and To me, love is caring.
Posing questions to fascinating people like Temple Grandin and giving them the time to answer on Fresh Air.
And Fresh Air begins in 20 minutes. It starts at noon on today's edition of the program. Bedbugs virtually disappeared from the United States by 1950. But now they're back in homes, hotels, schools, and even some movie theaters and clothing stores. On the next Fresh Air, an overview of the bedbug epidemic. That discussion begins at noon. And at WOSU, listener feedback is very important. We'd like to hear your thoughts on the conversations we've been having across the radio and web. We're creating an online audience advisory panel, and we're looking for your help. So if you have a moment, please go to WOSU.org/survey, and there you can sign up and send us your thoughts. It's WOSU.org/survey. And thanks for your continued support of WOSU. And it's 68 degrees in downtown Columbus at 11:41 this morning. Sunny skies today and a high of 75. Clear skies tonight, a little chilly, a low of 48 degrees. A nice day tomorrow, sunny skies and a high of 75. All Sides with Ann Fisher continues on WOSU.
Welcome back to All Sides with Ann Fisher. We're talking about September. It's Hunger Action Month. Our guest today, Lisa Hamler-Fugit. She's with the Ohio Association of Second Harvest Food Banks. And Matt Haba, she's with the Mid-Ohio Food Bank. And also Scott Marrier of WARM. It's the Westerville Area Resource Ministry. If you have a question, comment for any of these folks, give us a call, 614-292-8513, or email us at allsides@wosu.org. We're going to talk about some of the things you can do during September and anytime during the year to help address the hunger problem that we're facing in this country. 614-292-8513 if you want to give us a call. So, Hunger Action Month, we're on day eight. What's happened so far this month? Can you remember? Because none of us have our calendar. I've ordered one up, but
I think it's a combination of things. Really, for us, it was getting more people involved. You know, we tripled the size of our volunteer space. So as a result, we were able to have a lot more people. So we've really been encouraging people to come in, pack food. We took 3 loads of plums, for example, you know, that came from California, and had volunteers pack them up in our warehouse. Getting the school kids engaged, you know, going back to school is a big issue with us in terms of making sure they're aware that they can come volunteer as well. So for us, it really has been a stressing around the issue of volunteering. Obviously, with harvest season in the gardens and everything else, it's plant a row, share some of that food, do those kind of things. So it really has been around trying to engage the community in ways to get involved, encouraging. You know, one of the things we'll get out of our study, you know, shortly will be, how much more help do our agencies need, you know, with volunteers? And when we can start connecting our surplus of volunteers directly with agencies. So for me, it's about community engagement.
Today, I have the calendar now. It's find us on Facebook. Mm-hmm. So just going to Facebook and liking the Mid-Ohio Food Bank.
One of the things we started real early in this was, you know, connecting to social media. We had one of the first social media managers, you know, for nonprofits in Central Ohio, really trying to take advantage of those venues to connect people, because it's a real simple way to connect. You can text to give. You can do a variety of things on there and donate in small ways. For us, it was a way of really connecting to the social media folks initially. So for us, it's just getting the word out, raising awareness during Hunger Action Month is a big piece for us, so people know about what to do.
Now, can folks friend the Second Harvest? Do you have a Facebook page too? I'm pretty sure I'm a friend of that.
We do. They can visit our website at www.oashf. Follow the work. A couple of other things. We have been doing childhood hunger and obesity forums across the state, bringing in our congressional delegation so they can hear directly from providers, both at the food pantry, our child nutrition specialist around our backpack program and backpack program and kids cafe programs. We have started a paper plate campaign asking individuals who are depending on emergency food to tell us what brought them to the food line. Those are being collected now and will be distributed both to members of the Ohio General Assembly as well as to our congressional offices. What we're looking for is for people to give their time, talent, and treasure to volunteer at a local food pantry, at a local food bank. Get out, check on your neighbor, become an Ohio Benefit Bank trained counselor so you can assist folks. There are lots of opportunities for people to plug in.
614-292-8513, or you can email us at allsides@wosu.org. Tomorrow, I think the day when I looked at the calendar, and they're going to be printing one out for me in a sec, it was start a food drive in your office. Now, most of the food comes from the big producers and the big retailers that have excess. But there is value in a food drive. You were saying just to get people engaged, right, Matt?
Absolutely. I mean, a couple fronts. One is we provide about, I think from the information our agencies give back, about 80% of their food. That means basically they're coming up with 20% of this food on their own. Most of that's coming from food drives or local donations that they're securing close to their pantry. So for us, it's the third leg. When you talk about a public-private partnership, you know, with the federal government's been very helpful with the government commodities from USDA. State's been unbelievable with the Ohio farmers and getting us food from that avenue. You know, the private sector, food industry. And the last way is how you engage the community. So, you know, engaging somebody to collect food. I remember they come into our big warehouse and they walk in, a little kid walks in with a little bag of food and they see our huge warehouse and they go, this doesn't matter. And then I would walk them down a row and said, this entire row is full of bags of food like yours, one person at a time filling up. So we now have an entire row in our warehouse full of food drive that came in one bag at a time. So it makes a huge difference.
And it leaves too. Just as quickly.
It goes back out as fast as it comes in, as fast as we can pack it up and get it ready to go out to the agencies, it goes right back out.
How many folks do you employ now, Matt?
We have almost 70, most of which are truck drivers and warehouse workers and folks that are out delivering. Biggest change in my industry in the last 10 years has been delivery. We deliver the food to the other counties, and we're trying to deliver more and more of the food because of that fresh produce, because of their burden in terms of what, you know, when Scott talked about an 11% increase or the huge almost 50% increase. You know, keeping them at their site and being able to get the food to them when they need it has become our biggest challenge, you know, is making sure that they have enough food because space is an issue. You know, I can give them a big truck of food, but if they only have a little bit of space to put it in, I got to do multiple deliveries to get it to them when they need it.
And Scott Murrier, how big is your operation? Do you have enough space or could you use some more?
Well, our operation continues to grow based on demand, so space is always an issue. Looking at serving different day parts, Matt and I were talking about being open Saturdays and at night and when people are available as well is another way to expand your capacity and just in serving. You know, it's something that you deal with every day and trying to identify ways. We have we brought in a tractor trailer truck that we use for overflow. For supplies, for non-perishable, non-temperature sensitive products, just to be able to handle the overflow when that happens. So you get creative in how to being able to do that. You know, the action plans are really significant. Doing a food drive, doing a neighborhood drive or one at your work is really significant. I know at our agency, we looked at, with limited resources, really getting aggressive in doing local food drives, trying to engage the community. So our donated food is over 50% of what we distribute because that maximizes the amount that we can buy. So it's complementary that way. The other thing is, you know, when people say, well, I don't really have time to do a food drive, the impact of a donation, even a small donation, is significant because of the scale, because of partnerships that we enjoy with our regional supplier like Matt and others. $10 can buy up to 50 pounds of food in some cases. An average family of four at our operation, a six-day supply, is going to receive the equivalent of 70 pounds of food, which is going to be somewhere in the vicinity of 70 to 72 meals. So a $20 contribution represents about 100 pounds of food. That's enough to feed a family of five for a six-day period. So when somebody says, well, I don't have very much to give, it doesn't take very much to be able to be leveraged to really have an impact. And I know if you've been to the grocery store lately and you spent $20, I doubt that you could feed your family for $20. So in the hands of some you know, qualified people that can really leverage that resource, we can just make it go a lot farther. So when people say, well, should I donate food in a food drive or should I give you money? The answer is yes.
We have an email from a listener. They write, are vegetable and fruit seeds approved for purchase with food stamps at the local grocery store or approved vendor, in other words, the Family Dollar? If not, how can a food stamp recipient obtain vegetable seeds to garden in their own backyard? And they want to know if are things like strawberry plants and raspberry canes from nurseries included?
I'm not sure about the berries, but yes, they can purchase seeds for home planting. And again, some of the things that you can't purchase with food stamps are personal care, personal hygiene, and household cleaning items. And while we talk a lot about food, I really do want to make a point that these items are absolutely critical for being able to have a healthy life, and those are some of the items that are most in demand. So if you'd like to hold a personal care, personal hygiene, or household cleaning drive, we would certainly appreciate that as well.
So you stock those things at your pantries as well?
Toilet paper is the fastest moving item in the warehouse.
Right.
I mean, by far and away. We all use it. We all need it. And so it really is. And I think we forget that in this whole process. We really talk about taking all the products that a grocery store has to offer and making those available. I mean, we have a program even with, you know, we call Welcome Home, where folks that are moving back into a supportive housing apartment, we're the welcome wagon. We'll put a box of food, a box of cleaning supplies, and a box of personal care items, and then occasionally we get gas grills and bicycles and chest freezers and toys and coloring books and all those kinds of things. You know, we put that in the house so that when somebody's starting over, they have that base. They open up underneath the sink like we all do, and the cleaning supplies are sitting under there, and the dishwashing soaps are there. So it's just an extra little start. So all of those things are important. And to Lisa's point, you can't use the SNAP food stamp money for those things, so they're critical.
Basic existence in the 21st century is a little bit more complicated. That's right. I mean, you've got to stay clean. Things have got to be taken care of.
Just take for granted. I mean, we're all going back to school right now. The kids are all going back to school. The impact that the kids grew over the summer, and all of a sudden you got to buy clothes. What's that do to your food budget? You know, what's that do to the rest of your budget if you're on a fixed income or a declining budget? So, you know, just getting the kids ready to go back to school is a monumental challenge for somebody. So our ability to have whatever other resources they need gives them the ability to go find the clothes that they need to put the kid in, you know, kind of thing, or the shoes or whatever that is. So it's an important time for us right now, just come off the summer. We also think that, you know, summertime is the time when things go down. Reality is we're missing about 10 meals per kid per week,
right,
because of the school lunch, school breakfast program. So you see it, you know, that 8 or 9 weeks the kids are out of school is a big impact on our agencies.
Yeah. Well, you know, think about it. If you got up this morning and you had to make the choice between breakfast or getting cleaned up, mm-hmm, you know, shampoo and soap and deodorant and those types of things. So the ability to make goods like that available as well allows people to make some other choices. And then they can also leverage their SNAP resources to use and to buy fresh product, meats and highly perishable items that they might not be able to get in an assistance program like ours offered.
A lot of time you read or you hear people complaining that they see somebody in the grocery line at the grocery store buying something with their SNAP through the SNAP program that doesn't seem like it's something they ought to be able to buy, whether it's potato chips or whatever. What sort of restrictions are there nowadays?
No cigarettes, no tobacco, no personal care, personal hygiene.
But they may be buying it, but they're not paying for it with the
it needs to be for home consumption. There are some items as far as the deli product that can be purchased. But I think it's really important that USDA studies this, and USDA has found, in fact, that SNAP recipients buy more wholesome foods and make better choices than non-SNAP recipients. So, again, I think it's fighting off the myth with fact about the program. Right now in the state of Ohio, 1,745,000 Ohioans currently depend on the SNAP program. That's 1 in 7 people in our state. We know that there are many, many more who may be eligible but yet are bypassing the program. And if they'd like to find out more, they can visit 1-800-648-1176. An operator can assist them in doing a quick screen. Or they can go to the website, www.obb.ohio.gov, and learn more about the SNAP or food stamp program, this nation's first line of defense against hunger.
We'll post that website and also that phone number on our website, wosu.org/allsides. So you don't have to worry about that right now. One thing, Grandparents' Day is next on Sunday. Have a meal with or in honor of your grandparents and find out more about a local senior meals program. That's an issue. Seniors are going without food.
Absolutely. I think it's one of the growing areas that we continue to see. It's a hard group to reach with SNAP benefits and things where they won't make that kind of choice to go get government assistance. You know, if you want to volunteer, you know, the Volunt with Life Care Alliance to really get out and see. They do a fabulous job in this community of reaching food, but that's only reaching them with a certain amount of food. We have a supplemental feeding program called CFSP, which is a government program where we use volunteers to pack up 5,800 boxes of food every month to pass out to seniors. I mean, it really is or take our truck out to a senior site and meet with them. So I really do encourage. I mean, it was an eye-opening experience for me. If you get out and see how some of our seniors are living in an isolated world, just the connectivity to the volunteer is a huge win for that person socially, so let alone what you can do to make sure that they have enough to eat and really do celebrate. I think, you know, Scott's point, you know, in terms of how do we celebrate as a family, we celebrate around the issue of food. We're forgetting how to do that as we get busier and busier in our lives. So I think if all of us just take the time to slow down and, you know, and to enjoy each other's company, to do that with food is a huge win.
On the 17th, the suggestion for action is to look at – is a hunger study, to look at some of the local information from Feeding America's Hunger Study 2010. And we talked about that at the top of the hour, but maybe we can go back over that again, Lisa, and tell people what the need is out there and what the demand is and what you're able to do.
The hunger study is the most comprehensive study ever undertaken to determine the extent and severity of hunger. All 12 of our food banks participated. In fact, Mid-Ohio has a local Franklin County study on that. What we found in that study is that 1,430,000 different people, unduplicated people, turn to emergency food provider in order to feed themselves and their family. We also found that 78% of the networks that provide services are threatened, both with a lack of food and financial resources. It is a call to action, both from the findings, which, again, in the richest nation on earth, how we can have hunger continuing to grow at rates that they are. Very clearly, we need to expand those nutritional safety net programs, such as the SNAP program, our child nutrition programs, our commodity supplemental food programs. We need to make sure that people have access to those. But more importantly, hunger is preventable. We have got to muster the political will to ensure that the resources are available so no one goes hungry in our community, in our state, in our nation.
Matt?
I think one of the things from the study that I find most telling is that the choices that people are making. You know, it's 30-40% of the folks you talk to, and all the statistics are around choosing between the drugstore and the grocery store, and that's very real for our seniors and what they're facing right now. Choosing between paying your utility bill and being able to buy food, choosing between paying your rent, your mortgage, those kind of things. And we encourage people, please do all those things, because it's a lot harder to find you cash to do those kinds of activities. So food becomes the variable in the equation, and to the point where we say we'll find you food. It is something that is preventable. It is a way we can find additional resources. But people are making daily life choices, and food's usually the thing that suffers in that kind of choice, which also is going to have a big impact on our health.
And Scott?
Well, I think when I think about statistics, I think about the faces behind them, the lives touched. The numbers are big, but the lives are real. And so if you want to see what the face of hunger looks like, just look outside your window, because it looks just a lot like you.
Thank you, Scott Merrier of WARM in Westerville. He's executive director there. And also Matt Habash, president and CEO of the Mid-Ohio Food Bank, and Lisa Hamler-Fugit of the Ohio Association of Second Harvest Food Banks. Thanks for being with us today.
Thanks, Ann.
Thank you.
This is All Sides with Ann Fisher. This is listener-supported WOSU and WOSU HD 820 Columbus and streaming on the web at WOSU.org, WOSU 820, NPR News.